it'll be first and 25.
This is First and 25, the Football Zebras podcast, our 25-minute roundtable discussion on officiating. I'm Ben Ostro, and I'm joined by Mark Schultz, Chris Soibert, and Pat Weber. And so we're going to take a look at a few things that we saw this week, both in college and the NFL. I think we'll start with something that's a little interesting. We had a hideout play, which was not called over the weekend, and it was enough to draw a statement from the SEC. And so the recap pretty much is, as they stated, in Saturday's Auburn and Oklahoma football game with 10:50 remaining in the second quarter, a pass was thrown to Oklahoma number 5, resulting in a touchdown. Oklahoma number 5 participated in the previous play, which was a first down from the 22-yard line. After the first down play was completed, Oklahoma 5 continued towards his team's sideline but stopped just before reaching the Oklahoma sideline. And then they state the rule: no simulated replacements or substitutions may be used to confuse opponents. No tactics associated with substitutes or the substitution process may be used to confuse opponents. This includes any hideout tactic or without a substitute, with or without a substitution. The officiating crew did not properly interpret the action as a hideout tactic. If it had been properly officiated, the second down play should have resulted in an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty of 15 yards. And then they conclude with appropriate accountability will be applied without additional comment. So we checked around. We do not know what that appropriate accountability is, but we can guess at a few things, but nothing has been confirmed quite yet. So I guess let's first of all unpack what a hideout situation is, and you know, what by rule are you looking for, and what situations that would even come into play during a game.
When we work high school games, it's very easy because once the ball is declared ready for play, and usually that means it's spotted, all players who are going to be in participating in the down have to be momentarily within 9 yards of the sideline, which is basically the top of the numbers. If you have all those people, all those players momentarily inside the numbers, that's fine. And then they can go out to the side, and it's up to the defense to mark them off. If a substitute comes onto the field, he has to go to the top of the numbers, and then if he's supposed to be split way out by the sideline, he comes back. So it's easy, and it's supposed to be easy in high school, but there's all sorts of complicated substitution packages once you get to college.
Yeah, I mean, in college football, and you don't really see it in the pros as much, I mean, they're rare plays because they're against the rules, but you know, you'll have two guys come on and three guys go to the sideline and the third guy stops short, and you know, the defense is assuming those guys are going off, and you have, if they just stop right in front of the sideline, they don't get picked up and it's an easy touchdown pass. And it is a little different on the college and pro side with substitution mechanics, but at the same time, the teams still aren't allowed to manipulate their opponents by misinterpreting or hiding what they're doing with their substitutions and what players are coming on and off.
One more thing I need to add for the high school. We've been told that if, you know, he's a couple, three, four, five steps illegal, the substitute, but the defense sees him and comes out and spots up on him, just kind of let that go, and that's a talk to you. Say, hey, coach, he's got to get 9 yards onto the field to the top of the numbers. You know, next time, that's going to be a foul. You know, get him legal. But, Yeah, that it can be tough. Pat, in the NCAA, do you have that? If the defense sees him, do you let that flag go or do you have to flag it?
Yeah, if they're clearly trying a hideout play, it's still a foul. But if it's in that judgment area, it can definitely be a talk to if the defense covers them. Because we do have the same rule. They're supposed to be, you know, to be, if a substitute comes on, they're supposed to get inside the numbers and come back out. But if they're not gaining an advantage, usually we want to make it a talk to.
And I think football in general has started move. Well, shouldn't say started, has been moving this way for a while, where they want to try to get rid of trickery and deceiving your opponent in a variety of ways, right? Whether it's disconcerting acts on the defensive side to draw the false start on the offense, whether it's, you know, I actually had a coach in a youth game asking about kind of the old school fumble rooski, where, hey, can my center just put the ball down and, you know, somebody else grabs it? Like, oh no, that was, we got rid of that a long time ago. And I think the powers that be just want teams to play football and not try to do this sort of trickery, like a hideout play. And that's why I think, yeah, at every level we have these rules now where it's, if the officiating crew sees this and detects it. And I guess that's the one nuance of this call, right? Is, you know, they could be saying that I was just slowly walking to my position. I wasn't trying to deceive them as a substitute. And it's kind of up to the officials to figure out, you know, are they really trying to do a hideout play, or are they just trying to be slightly clever and not foul, like in this case? But they ended up actually, you know, the SEC said that should have been called.
And when you get up to the NFL level, I mean, there is a lot more leeway, but then we do see some situations where somebody just falls into, you know, trying to find that new wrinkle. And specifically, they're looking at players that line up along their own bench area. So you may even come in inside the numbers, but then you retreat back to the sideline and just kind of hug around the sideline. So between, you know, about 5 yards or so from the sideline, you've got halfway from the numbers to the sideline. Now you're starting to, you know, get into a trickery situation because you're just blending in with the bench personnel. But they will also allow that to be negated if that player is matched up. So, but again, that's all the way up at the top levels. And so then you don't see a hideout too terribly often, but then you also see various other substitution tactics. And one of them came about during the Packers and Browns game. Basically, Browns are trying to do a quick substitution between plays. Packers try to do a quick snap, and Browns call a timeout because they're getting caught with too many men on the field. Referee Carl Cheffers comes in, says, actually, there was a simulated substitution in there. We didn't get a chance to hold up the snap, so the timeout is going to be restored to the Browns. And basically, we didn't see on camera what the simulated substitute, but I do remember seeing something, you know, where they put this out on training videos a few years ago to be aware of this. Watch for players that are clustering near the sidelines and just kind of like looking like they're going to go out onto the field. There was, I believe it was the Packers as well, during a cold playoff game, a wild card game. Three players are sitting on the sideline. They're behind the play, so all the eyes of the officials are downfield, and there's three players in coats. They take off their coats real quick, but then don't move. And the other sideline reacts to that because they see three players that are getting ready to come onto the field, and then they don't. And then because it's behind the play, it's not picked up by the officiating crew. And in that case, because it was playoffs, they did have some alternate staff on the sideline that said, be aware of that, but you don't have that in the regular season. So these things, I mean, we're not going to be seeing jackets in September, but eventually we will be seeing that, or any kind of stutter step towards the sideline, from the bench area towards the sideline, to try and get the other side to start their substitution. And now you can pull a quick snap. They're hard to pick up. And in this case, it kind of looked a little bit messy going backwards and saying, yeah, we should have held this up, but we didn't get there quite in time before the timeout. So, you know, and this is one of these things that, you know, the wing officials are responsible for this hideout play that was not called against Oklahoma. But, like, I guess kind of go through some of the pre-snap checklist here and, you know, what exactly you're looking for, you know, and being attuned to some of these things specifically.
Yeah, you know, as a wing official, I work at the short wing. You know, my pre-snap pretty much goes, if I have subs coming on, what formation it is, so I can identify that the offense is in a legal formation. And then also based on that, which player my initial responsibility will be. I want to know in my head what the down and distance is and where our first down line is. And then one thing else I've tried to incorporate is knowing on the college side where my 3-yard mark is, so I am able better to process where linemen are on forward passes.
And this is probably something where at a higher level, you might actually have the deep wings give a little bit of an assist. I've even seen this as an NFL mechanic where if there's a 12th man coming off the field, yeah, your short wing is going to keep an eye on that, but they're also trying to train their eye on the snap. So the deep wing can then give a little bit of an extra eye to say, okay, he did get off in time or not, just helping him out a little bit in that pre-snap scenario. So when you have a situation where, you know, where there are some unusual tactics, and, you know, you probably spot things that just don't seem to make sense. You know, you see a bunch of players milling around. Well, what are they up to? You know, what's going on? It's something that kind of doesn't seem to follow the pattern. But then, and then in the case where, yeah, they start to walk towards the sideline, that might not be caught by the short wing because they haven't gotten onto the field. And so when you have 7 officials or 8 officials, you know, it's a little easier to pick up. You got 5 on a Friday night or less, you know, that sort of thing is going to really disappear. But then I guess, as Mark pointed out, having everybody come to the center, you know, inside the numbers starts to get some of that funny business out of the equation.
And on Friday nights, what I do from the white hat position is once the ball is declared dead, I look around to, you know, make sure that everybody's on the right page as far as the spot goes. I look over to the offensive sideline. I see one coming on and I see one going off. I say one on, one off. We're still at 11. Or I do a quick count and I see the quarterback over by the sideline getting the play from the coach. I count 10 in the huddle. I say, well, when the quarterback comes on, we got 11 and we're good. During that time, too, I also make sure the down box is good and communicate by hand signals to the umpire who works with me to count the players to make sure we have 11 or we're going to have 11. So a lot of times the referee can assist and be a big assist to the wing officials in regards to substitutes coming on. So that's something that I do on Friday night. And I just want, before we get too far down the line, commend Carl Sheffer's crew for straightening that situation out with the Browns. It might not have looked right, but as former Big Ten referee Steve Newman once said, it's better to look like excrement than be excrement.
Nobody has ever taken the, you know, burst the bubble on the podcast. Just actually said the words, but one day I think somebody's going to slip out. I think it's going to be Cam that's going to do it, but in his absence this week, you know, we go another week. We also, that same game, the Packers Browns game, near the end, there was a hurry up situation. And well, we have a rules school video up there, so I won't go too much into detail. But basically, what are the hurry up mechanics for the officials? Being able to have the umpire just tap the ball if it is spotted correctly by the center, and how the center does all of that, or if it's a deep pass, that the back judge gets the initial spot. At least at some point, an official touches the ball in the dead ball period. And that then brings up to the team that was on defense a question as to whether or not this was done right. Why is this happening? The Cowboys like to chime in with what their wild card fiasco every time. And so we have a video on that. But basically, it goes back to a philosophy that if the offense is pretty much ready, we don't want to be caught up in these pedantic mechanics to get the ball spotted. Just get the ball spotted. Let's get a snap. It's much better to see a snap than to see the officials going through an old procedure and when it suffices to say that, okay, I'll tap the ball and move on. And I'm sure that there's other ways that that comes up philosophically where, you know, you want to get the ball snapped and you don't want to have, you know, the time expire with the ball on the ground.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've always been told to, you know, move at a reasonable pace, but you know, we don't want officials sprinting around, dropping the ball and whatnot. And again, in the high school and obviously in college a little bit too, you know, we do stop the clocks on first downs in college, you know, toward the end of the game, but high school all the time. So we have a little bit more buffer there to actually get everything set up. But yeah, at the NFL level, you know, obviously they're all moving as fast as they can, but they also, you know, again, we've been told, and I'm sure they're told as well, you need to be in position to be able to officiate. And you can't go so fast where you can't actually officiate the next play. So there has to be some give and take there when it comes to their mechanics. Again, I think the fact that, you know, the back judge can set it sometimes, they can tap it. I think they've added enough sort of nuances to that process where things I think are getting off at a reason and complaining about one little thing, like you said, Ben, is, you know, if the snap gets off in a reasonable amount of time, I think everyone should be happy because that's what ultimately people want to see is a snap of the ball on a play.
You know, especially in the end of the game when we, you know, having some feel for the game, when we all know a spike is coming, it is definitely much better to have the offense get the opportunity to get up and just spike the ball than to have it be as tight as you need to be to have an actual play get off. And you can see that at different levels too. Like in college, we don't do the substitution mechanics on a obvious field goal at the end of the half because everybody knows it's coming and the offense should have that opportunity if they earn it.
I think the NFL mechanics are very good, especially since the clock doesn't stop on a first down on long gainers in the NFL. And it only stops in the last couple minutes in college. And as Chris said, it always stops in high school. What we always say is everybody needs to be in position to officiate. As long as the down box is in, is on the right spot, and as long as the back judge and the line judge and the head linesman are there and in their positions to officiate, I have the umpire stand over the ball while everybody gets into position, and then I give him a signal to move out, and then I wind the clock. So that's how we do it in high school. And one thing, too, that players at all levels are starting now is many times instead of leaving the ball on the ground and letting the officials pick it up and throw it into the referee or the umpire to spot, the player who's downed, the ball carrier who's downed, gets up and runs the ball straight into the hash to the umpire and hands it to the umpire. That is a wonderful thing, and one of those why didn't we think of this 30 years ago type of mechanics where the players cooperate with the officials to get the ball in. And we many times have said, you know, in a pregame, I talk to the high school coach. He says, we go fast, we go fast. And I say, one of the best ways to help you go fast is to have the ball carrier, when he's downed, run the ball in to the umpire. That is a faster way to spot the ball. But we will still make sure everybody's in position to officiate. If they want to go fast, we'll let them go fast, but we can't have our backs turned to the field or backpedaling to our proper spot when they're snapping the ball.
And I think this came up, especially at the NFL level, came up when Chip Kelly became the coach of the Eagles and tried to bring a lot of really quick snap tactics to the NFL. And at the time, Dean Blandino was the head of officiating, and we talked to him, and he says, outside of 2 minutes, the officials control the tempo of the game. And basically saying that, yeah, we'll get the ball spotted in a reasonable amount of time. And, you know, 30 on the play clock is reasonable. 25 is about the limit. When it goes below 25 and there's an official that's holding it up, well, then they'll pump up or something that's disadvantaging the offense. They will pump it up to at least have 25 for the offense. But yeah, if that ball is spotted within 10 seconds, that is quite reasonable for time outside of a hurry up offense, which then addresses when people say, well, why don't they do this the whole game? Why do they only do it? And it comes back to what Pat says. It's situational awareness. You're expecting the spike play to happen. So officiate like you're expecting what's going to happen happens. And 95% of the time, that's what's going to happen. So accommodate those situations when they are and stay within a prescribed group of mechanics, which it's great that they've come up with this, because now the Browns did that play because they knew what the mechanics were. They kept their linemen open so that there's a lane for the umpire to get through. They made sure that they looked to the side to see, you know, the center is putting that ball down based on where the wing officials are at that particular time. When the ball is a little bit too deep, it'll be the deep officials that set the line until the short wings come up. It all works in concert, and the teams are aware of this now, so now they can coach the players towards these mechanics. So, yeah, it probably would be, you know, at the lower levels, you know, you would probably not see it quite as much, but, you know, now we have like three people in charge at the NFL office. You have Walt Anderson, who's now giving officiating training, giving what the officials get to the team so that they can now coach for it. It's a completely different mindset than where we were 10 years ago.
Yeah. Even at D3 scrimmages and, you know, college scrimmages, we're having conversations with coaches and they want to know what we're looking for so they can teach their players how to play within the rules. And they're looking to coach their players the best they can.
And Chris, take us, there is no 2 minute warning, but let's get into the waning minutes of the half. And you have the offense there, and you know they might be in a reasonable position to advance to a score. I would assume at that point you're having a conversation with the offense and say, hey, look, if this happens, this.
Yeah, I mean, throughout the game, I think, as Mark alluded to and as Pat alluded to, I mean, we're having conversations with the center, with everyone, where as we come in and in the pregame, again, if they're saying, hey, we usually go fast, it's like, okay, again, like, we'll accommodate for it. But in the last 2 minutes, especially, it's, you know, I as a white hat, if I see the runner down, I'll say, hey, behind you, you know, the center, you know, the umpire is behind you. I give them direction to help them get the ball to the official. And again, the only time we get burned sometimes are on really long plays. But again, fortunately in high school, we kill the clock. So we have that time to get to the spot and spot the ball without really disadvantaging the offense as much as we could if that clock was warning. So but again, it's like everything in officiating. It's communication. If you can do that, you will run your game pretty well and be successful in the end.
And with that, we're in our hurry up, and we thank you for listening. I'm Ben Ostro, joined by Mark Schultz, Chris Soibert, Pat Weber this week, and you can catch us anywhere where you can find your podcast. Wherever you find your podcasts, you can listen to us there. Many thanks for listening.